Alors nous accueillons maintenant Madame Lidars. La docteure donc Lidar Sapir-M de l'Université de Tel Aviv, qui va nous parler d'archéozoologie. Alors dans le titre, c'est zooarchéologique, donc je ne sais pas s'il y a une différence qui est faite entre archéozoologie et zooarchéologie. Bon, je sais pas. Donc j'aurais plutôt traduit comme ça, puisque vous le savez, la conférence est en anglais. Vous avez, je crois que ça circulait, ou c'est à l'entrée, me dit-on. Vous avez la conférence qui est traduite en français sur un document papier, si vous voulez suivre. Voilà, donc Lidar Sapir-M est aussi connue pour une autre question cruciale, puisqu'elle a beaucoup écrit sur est-ce que le porc est un marqueur ethnique dans l'Israël ancien. Donc c'est une grande question, vous le savez, pour les archéologues, pour les biblistes. Donc c'est la spécialiste, je crois, de la question. You are the specialist of the pig bones.
Yeah.
I just explained that in French. So thank you very much. Now it's your time. You have 25 minutes.
Okay.
It's okay?
Yeah. In my talk, I wish to present a perception of livestock animals as part of the ritual and sacrificial world. Its blood does not leave any archaeological trace. I will focus on the choice of animals for sacrifice and the way they were prepared for it. Ceremonies that involve intentional burial of animals are acknowledged to bear religious, social, and political connotations. Today, I want to ask, what is the symbolic value of different animals for people of the Bronze and Iron Ages? I will present a case study from Tel Megiddo and put it in the larger context of rituals involving animals. Food and identity has long been recognized as interconnected. The choice of food, the way it is prepared, and the way it is consumed all directly relate to the identity of the individuals in the group or in the group they wish to belong to. People choose what they eat in order to establish their identity, social, cultural, and ceremonial. Animals, not only consumed ones, are often used as symbols of power and status and as symbols of culture. The archaeological study, the archaeology of study of animal remains, is the most suitable to examine the ways in which animals and food were used by ancient populations to construct and define their identity. Identifying the animals that were consumed or avoided, the way they were raised and the way they were prepared for consumption and later disposed of, can teach us about the attitude toward these animals. In the context of consumption, the value of meat may be related to the animal's taxon, age of death, meat quantity and quality of different parts, and the products it potentially produces. Hence, these are the characteristics that archaeozoologists look at in order to decipher the animal exploitation in a specific site. We look at the species diversity, which animals they ate or avoided, the herd composition, the age and sex of the herd, the animal's body part frequencies, and evidence of preparation methods. I will use these assemblage characteristics later in my talk. During the late Bronze and Iron Ages of the Southern Levant, the subsistence economy of both agropastoralists and urban dwellers was based on livestock animals, sheep, goats, and cattle. During this time, thousands of years after their domestication, livestock animals were exploited for their primary product, their meat, as well as for their secondary products, milk, wool, and work. These animals dominate almost entirely all types of archaeological contexts, not only domestic and industrial, but also cultic and ritual. Other scarcer livestock animals in the Bronze and Iron Ages include pigs and donkeys. The exploitation of animals can be either defined as economic or non-economic. The separation between these forms of exploitation is not straightforward, as economic and non-economic factors often occur concomitantly. This complexity is particularly pronounced when referring to livestock animals. The majority of domestic farm remains originates from food refuse. These were consumed and thus had a primary subsistence economic role in supplying meat and calories. However, the role is also related to the manner of their exploitation before consumption, to the way they were consumed, at which age they were slaughtered, and which body parts were consumed or saved, whether the people at question raised them or only received meat supply, were they treated in a special way during life or after death. Generally, a waste of potential gain from animals will be considered a non-economic use. Such a waste would be the slaughter of an animal that did not reach its full weight or was not exploited for its main aim. When we turn to examine evidence in the archaeological record of rituals with animals, we see that these were almost always based on common livestock species. We can see several types of ceremonies with animals that leave their mark on the archaeological records. These include burial of animals' remains with human remains. This can be the leftovers of a feast near the tomb, or a special meal that was prepared to accompany the dead. Burial of animal remains in ceremonial context without human remains can be the result of a feast which leftovers are disposed of, or otherwise a burial of a complete animal as a sacrifice to appease the gods. These ceremonies with animals all represent a non-economic use of animals, a waste of potential gain from animals, which would have otherwise have primarily subsistence economic role and be used for their meat or other products. In order to identify a non-economic role, I use the characteristics that I presented earlier. My case study is from Tel Megiddo. It is an urban center located in the Jezreel Valley in northern Israel, from strata dated to the late bronze and iron ages. From that case study of a household ritual, I will start, and then compare to contemporary ceremonies of similar nature and to public feasting events. In a previous research of the animal economy in Megiddo, we demonstrated the way specific populations in the city, namely those residing in higher status neighborhoods, were provisioned with meat through a redistribution system. Analysis showed that the elite neighborhood was provisioned with sheep and goats, good cuts of meat. The elite neighborhood is the one marked area age on the right side. It was provided with sheep and goats, young tender, slaughtered at a young age, meat-rich body portions. The population that received good cuts of meat was associated with the palace located in the northwestern sector of the mound. The higher status is most pronounced when the diet is compared to the lower status populations. These were the inhabitants of the domestic quarter in the southwest of the Tel. This is Area K on the left side. They were engaged in local industries. The final analysis revealed that these lower class populations raised livestock animals for meat and secondary products, used cattle for agriculture, and produced their own food. However, the results also show that cattle and sheep and goat meat are perceived as holding different values. Cattle meat was provided young to area age, to the elite area, but all body parts, rich and poor in meat, were provided. The young age demonstrate a non-economic use in the sense that the cattle were not used for the plow, but killed early in their life. Such a waste was clearly intended to display wealth. But the presence of all body parts means that in the case of cattle, the interaction of the consumers with the herders was more direct than in the case of the sheep and goat, and that cattle went through a shorter distribution chain than sheep and goat. I found the same pattern, exactly the same pattern, at other urban sites of that period. And now I wish to focus on Area K, which is the area where they was self-providing its own food, and it is the lower status neighborhood. So in this area, a stone-built family tomb chamber and individual pit burials were uncovered, including 23 individuals, human individuals, probably representing several generations of a single family. All the remains were pushed aside to make room for the new burials. And this tomb also includes many animal remains in association with the human remains. This tomb was located below floors, within the large domestic courtyard house. It seems that while ancestors were buried beneath the floor, life continued in the rooms above. Burials within the boundaries of the settlement are often associated with ancestral worship, and their aim is considered to be to advertise the success of the surviving family and kin groups, and to create or enhance social bonds between family members. Animal remains found in the rooms above the tomb seem to represent daily mundane activities and are referred to here on as habitation assemblage. So I will compare the burial finds with the daily habitation context, with the aim to shed light on the death rituals as social acts entwined with the ideological world of the inhabitants. I compare the habitation assemblage with the burial assemblage, and I use the characteristics I presented to you earlier. So the first one is species frequencies. So we can see that the tomb is dominated by sheep and goats with a very low percentage of cattle. But in the habitation assemblage, the relative frequencies of sheep and goat and the presence of cattle is more similar to a typical Mediterranean diet of the Bronze and Iron Ages. This is usually what we see, 80% sheep and goat and 20% cattle. When we look at the sheep and goats, we can see that the sheep dominate the tomb assemblage. They are the majority, 95 of this assemblage is sheep. But in the habitation, they are equally represented. And again, this is typical Mediterranean diet in the habitation. Cattle and goats, both of which played an important role in the economy of this area, also in later periods, are nearly absent from the burials. This is the diet in the habitation is also the typical diet in other sites of the late Bronze and Iron Ages. Okay. Age profiles for sheep and goats were based on long bone fusing. In the tomb assemblage in gray, it shows a major decline in survivorship between the ages of 6 to 12 months. Only 50% of the individuals survived to this age. This is not an optimum age for slaughter, which economically is taken to be 18 and 30 months. Rather, no slaughter of animals is observed in the optimum age. This emphasis on ages 6 to 6 months fits a model of exploitation focused on tender meat. Another drop of survivorship is evident between ages 2.5 and 2.5 years and 4 years. The survivorship at these ages is lower than expected when aiming either for meat economy or for exploitation of milk products. Age profiles of the habitation assemblage in white shows a major decline in survivorship between ages 0 and 6 months, and this pattern fits a model of milk lambs, with cooling at birth indicating a search for high production of milk. The survivorship in ages older than 2.5 years is slightly higher than recorded in the tomb, implying a greater focus on secondary products such as milk. Other characteristics that I examine, animals deposited in both contexts are represented by all body parts, rich and poor in meat, suggesting that the preparation for the ceremony was carried out near the tomb and that meat cuts were not provisioned from an external source. The presence of cut marks resulting from disarticulating the limbs, dismembering, and removing of the flesh, the filleting, in the process of preparing the animal for consumption, testifies that animals were consumed, at least partly, prior to their deposition with the dead. It is noteworthy that the sacrificed animals were processed less intensively than those found in the habitation context, as reflected in the frequency of cut marks, which is significantly lower in the burials. This result corresponds well with ethnographic observations that on special occasions where several animals are sacrificed at a single event, the processing is less intense than in private consumption, which aims at a better nutritional value. All of the above allowed us to reconstruct a ceremonial behavior, which includes consumption of several very young sheep near the tomb, within the house, and the position of their remains in the tomb with the deceased. The current comparison with the habitation economy of the same site shows that there is a deliberate choice of these animals for the ritual. Sheep were chosen over goats and sacrificed at an age which enables utilizing their tender meat. In contrast, in their daily routine, the inhabitants of this area produce their own food as well as surplus meat and milk for the market, as it is attested also in studies of later periods. I suggest that this is related to the perceived value of young sheep meat. Sheep meat was considered fatter than goats, and tender meat of animals killed before optimal age was considered a luxury food, reflected in meat quality. This lavish display of consumption in the family burial is probably used to advertise the success of the surviving family and kin group, that they can afford such a waste of food, and thus to create or enhance social bonds between family members. A preference for sheep and goats, with emphasis on young sheep, is prevalent in the Levant human burials. Previous research stipulated that this preference for young sheep is related to the general preference for sheep and its exploitation for wool production. However, sheep are not the common animal in other sites, but only in the context of burials. Their frequencies in such rituals are never in correlation to their frequencies in the domestic context. Moreover, the majority of sheep were slaughtered young, and thus were not exploited for their secondary products, such as wool. A few factors can explain the symbolic value of sheep in such inhumations. First, it can be related to the animal economic potency. While agro-pastoralist groups may find advantages in keeping mixed herds, urban societies' choices are related to various other factors. Sheep has more fat than goats, and they can be exploited to more suitable secondary products. Thus, they pose an advantage in a market economy. This means that their choice for funerary rituals may be related to the higher economic value, and their common non-economic use in sacrifice is a means to communicate wealth on the household level, to differ from public feasting events, which I will discuss next. In addition to their economic potency, sheep were highly valued in ancient times. Only lamb's organs were used as oracles for divination in the second and first millennia in Mesopotamia. And only sheep are described as used as offerings for the dead in texts from ancient Mesopotamia. I now compare this household event to feasting events, which are disposal of leftovers of a feast not related to human burials in places like palaces and temples. When I examine these rituals that are not related to human burials and that are carried in public locations, a completely different pattern emerges. These are not based solely on sheep and goats. They include many wild games and rare animals, in addition to very high frequencies of cattle, both almost completely absent from the human burials. The high value that wild game meat poses is based on factors such as ability to hunt them and the prevalence of leisure time. This fits with the more common perception of luxury food, that is, of a prestige food, due to its scarcity or symbolic potency, emphasizing quality over quantity. Similarly, among the livestock animals, cattle are considered expensive to raise. Cattle are relatively higher maintenance animals compared to other livestock animals, as they require vast pasture land and a larger amount of food. They are also of great importance to the sustainability of grain agriculture in the Bronze and Iron Ages, and hence should be more luxurious to consume. This attitude toward cattle is not unique to this region. It is also found in Bronze Age Mesopotamia and in Bronze Age Anatolia, where cattle were used both for agriculture and as a source of elite wealth. In addition to the high maintenance requirements, cattle may be perceived as a higher status animal due to its larger size and its ancestry relation and morphological resemblance to the wild auroch, which was also assigned a symbolic status by hunters. Thus, both wild game and cattle may serve as symbols of power. This choice of animals suits the aim of public feasting events, to create exclusivity and distance, and to construct political power. It differs from the household-level events at Megiddo and at other places. The fact that cattle is more expensive is also reflected in the provisioning of meat cuts to the palace that I showed you earlier, as demonstrated in the previous study. And that sheep and goats were provisioned to the palace, but not cattle, may imply that the populations near the palace were essentially middle class, not rich enough to afford selected cattle meat parts. Studies of domestic livestock often assume that while wild game enjoyed a symbolic status, livestock animals were only treated as commodities. However, it was already noted by previous scholars that the secondary products revolution promoted an enduring relationship between people and their livestock. This resulted from the relationship the herder had with its livestock, especially when these relationships became close and long-term ones, when animals were exploited for their secondary products and thus kept to an older age, and required daily close interaction, such as milking. Differing from wild games, whose symbolic value is rooted in the sphere of myth, treated as ancestors and protectors, livestock animals' symbolic value is based on their potential economic value, which is used as a means to display wealth and also on their interaction with humans. To conclude, these studies demonstrate that attention was paid to the choice of animals sacrificed in ritual events, and that social target of burials also dictates the food related to the funeral ritual. In daily life, livestock animals bear various symbolic potency that is expressed in the way they are used as a means to display wealth. It implies that attitudes toward livestock animals in the late Bronze and Iron Ages of the Southern Levant were not solely related to the economic motivation, but rather to human decision influenced by political and social factors. Differential access to meat sources was used to obtain and demonstrate power and wealth on the private and on the public levels. It played a socio-cultural and economic role in building social structure. Finally, the choice of specific meat sources was related to the social message that the population aimed to communicate. Merci.